couldn't have held off 10 more minutes, said Taria. The crowds outside had thinned dramatically, chased away by the cloudburst. Ahsoka risked a look behind them. There was no sign of the Anzati, but she could still feel him in the Force, angry and uncertain, raw violence simmering.
What is it? Said Mata Fernan. What's gone wrong?
Nothing, said Taria, with a reassuring smile. But it would be good if we hurried. She pointed to the not-too-far-away but still not-close-enough multi-level parking station.
We're in there.
One hand resting on the hilt of her lightsaber, the other under Mata's elbow to help her along, Ahsoka crushed every flicker of alarm as they made tracks for their ground car.
I've smashed battle droids and SBDs, I've flown starfighters and staps, I've based down evil Sith henchmen and women, and I'm Anakin Skywalker's apprentice. One Anzati is no match for me.
Even so, her heart beat like a drum.
I think we've lost him, don't you?
She asked Taria, trying to sound unworried. Taria reached into the Force.
Not exactly, she murmured. He's still there, but he's a long way behind us, and definitely confused. But it's better than nothing. To be on the safe side, let's pick up the pace.
She glanced at the old woman between them.
Sorry, Mata. It'll be over soon, I promise.
Breathless, the old woman nodded. She was fit for an aging human, but their hurrying was taking its toll. The crowd had grown again, fresh arrivals streaming out of the parking station and heading for the markets. Ahsoka let out a tiny sigh of relief. The more people, the better. Camouflage, each and every one.
Hey, said Taria, looking over Mata Fernan's bowed head as at last they made their way into the station. Don't suppose you remember where we parked?
For one terrible moment, she thought Master Damson was serious, and then came that swiftly flashing, mischievous smile.
Not funny, Taria.
Ahsoka choked out.
Really, really not funny.
Oh, come on, dear, wheezed Mata Fernan. You have to admit it was a little funny.
Hey, said Taria, impressed. I like you.
Almost hobbling now, still Mata Fernan managed a smile.
You're taking me to my daughter, dear. I love you.
They made it safely to an empty turbo lift and let it whoosh them up to the third level, where it spat them out again. They paused.
Feel anything?
Taria asked. Ahsoka shook her head.
You?
Not so far. Taria scanned the entire third level, frowning as she worked her way through all the other shoppers arriving and leaving. It was raining again, heavily, water blowing in through the station's open sides.
I think we're good. Let's go.
They made it to their ground car, freed it with the ID chip, and piled inside.
Back seat, Mata, said Taria, slinging the old woman's shopping bag on the floor. And lie down.
You're very bossy, dear, Mata complained, doing as she was told.
I know. I'm sorry. And it's Taria, not dear.
All set?
Good.
Off we go. As she backed the ground car out of its slot, Taria activated its shields.
Wish they were armored, she muttered.
Still, we should be all right.
Ahsoka nodded, her heart pounding, lightsaber unclipped and in her hand.
Yes, we should be.
And they were, until they hit the last section of exit ramp, where everything went wrong. Their only warning was a red screaming in the Force, half a heartbeat before the Anzati attacked.
Hold on,
Taria shouted, slamming the brakes as he leapt lightly from the level above onto the exit ramp directly in front of them. He carried two heavy concussion grenade launchers and fired them as he landed. One volley missed and exploded the small ground car behind them. The death of its driver flared brief and bright in the Force. The other concussion charge clipped the side of their ground car, bounced onto the close-by ferrocrete retaining wall, and erupted into gouts of crimson flame. Its systems overwhelmed, their ground car's shielding collapsed.
Ahsoka, said Taria with one single burning look. Alive, remember? Stick to the plan. Mata, stay where you are. Don't you dare move. Ahsoka?
In perfect harmony, they force-jumped out of the ground car, lightsabers igniting as they speared through the air. Smoke and flames and screaming and klaxons, horns blasting, feet running, chaos and madness. Plunged into the harsh otherworld of combat, Ahsoka was dimly aware of Taria fighting beside her, a brilliant tawny gold flame in the Force.
Alive. Alive. If we end up confronting him, the plan is to take him alive.
The Anzadi was Force-sensitive, but he hadn't been trained. He was working on instinct and years of bloody practice. Ferociously swift and heavily armed, he fired again and again until there was so much smoke and fire around them it was hard to breathe or see. But even so, they were beating him back, deflecting his lethal concussion grenades, dousing his raging hunger for their deaths with the light side of the Force.
Ahsoka!
Taria cried again. Get ready!
What? Get ready? What did she...
And then she saw it. The Force showed her, the way it showed Anakin things all the time and showed her not so often. She saw the split second where their desperate battle could turn.
Yes, now.
Leaping forward and across, she drew the Anzati's eager fire, her lightsaber a blurring whirl designed to frighten and defend. And in that tiny moment of his uncertainty, Taria lowered her own guard and leapt directly at him. Using the Force to pluck the concussion grenade launchers from his hands, she flipped him upside down to strike his back to the ferrocrete ramp with a brutal finality. He shouted his pain once, then fell silent. Giving him no chance to recover, Taria leapt again, planted her booted right foot on his heaving chest, and pointed the tip of her green lightsaber at the hollow of his throat. His grayish skin paled with shock. His cheek proboscises were unfurled and lying limp across his shoulders. His eyes were open, his lips peeled back in a snarl. Shaking, Ahsoka heaved great gasps of filthy, stinking air into her lungs and stared at Taria, who was gasping just as hard, even as she grinned.
Stang, Padawan, you are good.
Ahsoka grinned back.
You're not exactly a slouch yourself, Master, she replied. I think...
What? Said Taria. Then she stopped and dragged the back of her hand across her face. The bright red blood leaking from her nose and eyes smeared her skin, mixing with the smoke and sweat from the fight. She swallowed.
Taria?
It's nothing, Taria snapped. Forget it. Not your concern.
Not her concern, but... Hey, Mata!
Taria was looking past her, back at their ground car.
Mata, are you all right? Yes, dear.
Came Mata Fernan's quavering reply, barely audible over the shriek of approaching sirens and the hubbub of shocked spectators milling in disarray. She was still tucked inside the ground car.
I'm all right. How about you?
We're fine, Mata. Hold on. We'll be on our way soon.
All right,
said Mata Fernan.
But hurry up. I want to see my daughter.
Taria's grin slipped. I know you do, Mata. You'll see her soon, I promise.
Taria?
Don't, said Taria, her eyes flashing a warning. It's not a lie. Not exactly.
At least it won't be if we can help it.
On the ground, a captive, the Anzati started to laugh. Bantina startled awake on her lumpy sofa to feel 5 fat, clammy fingers clamped tight around her bruised throat. To see a moist, flat face and 2 lidless, oddly pupiled eyes looming over her.
Oh no. Oh no. Let this be another dream.
Well, well, my dear, said the general, almost purring. I think you have a little something to tell me, don't you?
She dimmed the lights after the Jedi left, but now they were kicked up to full illumination. With the window boarded over, she couldn't tell if it was day or night. How long had she been asleep? Had she missed Anakin's next call?
Stang!
Where had she left the comlink? Was it in full sight where Dird would find it?
Silence won't help you, Doctor, said Dird, tightening his grip. Silence is the last thing in life that will help you.
Letting go of her, he straightened his vast bulk and stepped back.
If you value your whole skin, if you value the well-being of those you claim to love, you will not remain silent. Do I make myself clear?
Warily, she sat up, not taking her eyes off him. Touched fingertips to her burning throat.
General.
Her voice was raspy, talking hurt. It was a wonder he hadn't crushed her larynx.
I don't know what
Lies will get your family and friends killed faster than silence, Gerd snarled.
And then he was holding up the comlink, brandishing it in her suddenly bloodless face.
Where did you get this?
She felt her heart stop, felt the air freeze in her lungs. Icy tears blurred her vision.
It's over.
I am not a foolish creature, said Dird, his voice thick with rage. I am a personage of great value, wanted by the Republic and prized by Count Dooku. Did you think I wouldn't take precautions, my dear? At my insistence, the comm equipment in this compound is tagged, and an automatic sweep is regularly performed to account for each comlink. The last sweep found that two links were missing from their designated location.
He waggled the comlink again.
Here is one. Where is the other?
I don't know, General, she said, her lips stiff and cold.
And that wasn't a lie. She had no idea where the Jedi were hiding.
I swear it. I don't know where it is. I don't understand any of this. I don't know how that comlink got in here. Perhaps one of the battle droids was inspecting my quarters and dropped it.
Dird threw the comlink at her and began to pace between the sofa and her curtained-off bedroom.
I have more to tell you, Doctor. You might think the news is cause to celebrate, but I promise you, you're wrong.
If she asked him to tell her, he would win. Ignoring the comlink landed on the sofa beside her, she said nothing. Dird waited. Waited. And then he gave in.
A short time ago, he said, hating her, someone rescued your mother.
It nearly killed her, but she kept her face blank.
Anakin. Oh, Anakin, you kept your word. I don't understand.
Oh, my dear, I think you do, said Dird, menace rolling off him like marsh stink. And I expect you're dying to know how I know that your mother is rescued. Well, since I don't want you dying, at least not quite yet, I shall satisfy your lethal curiosity. The Anzati who was watching her told me. We had an arrangement, precautions, you see. He sent me a signal to let me know he had failed.
Mata. Mata is safe. No matter what else happens, this Barv can never hurt her.
I'm afraid I don't know any more than that, Dird added. But you would do yourself some small good if you were to enlighten me.
My mother was an actress. I am her daughter. I can bluff this fat fool. I won't lie to you, General, she said, meeting his furious stare. I am overjoyed that my mother is safe, but I do not know who rescued her or why. How could I possibly know that? I'm your prisoner. And even if I did steal this comlink, which I didn't, it's not powerful enough to reach anyone off-world. I couldn't arrange my mother's rescue no matter how much I wanted to.
Dird didn't curse or hit her. Instead, he pulled a compact hollow transmitter from his pocket and balanced it on his palm. Flicking it on with his thumb, he pressed a coded sequence of buttons on its base. A moment later, a small hollow image shivered into view. It was her childhood playmate, Sam-Sam. He was power gliding along the shore of Corellia's Lake Radu. It was dawn there, his favorite time of day. She knew it was the lake because that was the Radu lighthouse behind him. She'd know it anywhere. And she knew it was Sam-Sam because she'd know him anywhere. He always wore a bright yellow glide suit.
Sam-Sam. Oh, Sam-Sam.
Still unspeaking, Dird pressed the transmitter's comm panel a second time. Nothing happened. Sam-Sam kept on gliding.
What did you do?
She couldn't take her eyes off that gliding yellow figure, carefree and laughing as it rode the wild wind.
What did you do?
A high-pitched buzz. Instead of answering her question, Dird answered a comlink he took from his pocket.
Yes?
A metallic voice buzzed. She couldn't make out the words, but Dird's face flushed with more choking anger.
I see. Fix them.
Samsam was still gliding, terrified of what the comlink call might mean. Still, she feasted her hungry gaze on her friend.
He's all right. He's all right. Dird's just trying to scare me. Samsam's all right. He's...
Between blinks, the bright yellow chest of Samsam's glide suit turned red. And then he was tumbling out of the dawn sky, lazily falling like an autumn leaf from a tree, down, down, falling so far down. In utter silence, he fell into the lake and sank beneath its ruffled surface. Dimly, through the ice storm roaring in her head, she heard Locke Dird laugh.
That was a lie.
She couldn't recognize her own voice.
That wasn't real. You're trying to trick me. You faked it. Samsam's not dead.
Dird laughed again, delighted.
You can think that if you want to, my dear. You're wrong, but you can think it. And you can keep on thinking it as I order the death of another person you love. Or better yet,
he smiled widely.
Why don't I let you choose your next victim?
She wished she could cry. She wanted to cry, but the roaring ice storm had frozen her tears.
No.
Doctor, there's no point playing this game anymore, said Dird,
his murderous fury transmuted to something worse, to gloating glee.
Someone has erased several sections of security recordings, footage from your lab, from this room, a few corridors. It was cleverly done. It could be a malfunction. It looks like malfunction, but we both know that's not true. Tell me who did it. Tell me who's helping you.
No one's helping me,
she said dully.
Samsam, you've made a mistake.
Oh, my dear, said the general. One of us has.
He fetched her single kitchen chair and placed it in front of her. Then he punched a fresh code into the compact holotransmitter and put it on the chair. Nothing. Nothing. And then the air flickered, an image coalesced, and she was looking at her nephews playing tag in a park. She stopped breathing.
Who is helping you, Doctor?
The Nymoidian asked, so gently as though he were concerned for the state of her health. She shook her head.
No,
she croaked.
No, you can't do this. Those are children. They're practically babies. You can't.
They're not babies to me, said Dird, indifferent. Little squirming pink blood sacks. That's all they are.
Samsam gliding. Samsam falling through the air. Her nephews were laughing. Irek, the older, was sitting on Tam's head. And now those icy tears were falling. They were freezing her face. Her heart was a lump of ice freezing her blood. One tap and she'd shatter.
I have to. I have to. I don't have a choice. The Jedi,
she said, fingers fisted in her lap.
The Jedi are helping me.
Dird's moist face turned sickly.
Jedi, he croaked. There are Jedi here? How did they find me? I have protection from Count Dooku, a guarantee that those scum won't sense my presence.
She swallowed.
What is he talking about? Perhaps your protection stopped working, General. If I could take a look at it...
I took it off, he snapped. It hurts my skin.
He pressed his palms to his fat cheeks. His hands were trembling.
How did they find me?
I don't know.
Dird exploded into rage. She didn't try to defend herself as he slapped and scratched and punched her. He dragged her onto the floor by the hair and kicked her back and her belly and spat in her face. She did nothing to stop him, just closed her eyes and let him hurt her, wishing he'd snap completely and break her neck.
You did this, didn't you? He screamed. When you are off-world, you contacted the Jedi Temple for help. How many have come to destroy me, Doctor? How many?
Half-blinded with pain, she curled on her side and stared up at him. She could feel blood dripping off her chin.
Two. Only two? You're sure of that?
She nodded.
Yes, I swear it. Two.
He stamped around the room, arms flailing.
Jedi! They got their filthy hands on me once. They won't get me again. The Counter will never forgive me if they get me again.
He turned on her, rushed at her, loomed over her, fists waving.
You let the Jedi in here? I should kill them all. Your brother and your sister and their stinking offspring and your little friends. I want to hear your screaming, Doctor. I want to see you rend the flesh from your face as the grief drives you mad. The Jedi. Where are they now? Are those vermin still here, in the compound?
No,
she whispered.
They left.
I don't believe you,
he shouted, and turned to the holotransmitter. She lunged at him, frantic.
It's true. They left. They left. I swear it on my life.
No,
said Dird, pointing at her beautiful nephews.
You swear it on their lives, but I think you're lying.
Again, his fingers fisted in her hair. Her head was dragged back so far and so hard she did think he'd snap her neck. And now she didn't want him to.
No, no, no,
she gabbled, trying to pull his fingers free.
Please, no, you're hurting me. Don't hurt me, and I'll help you. Don't hurt them, and I'll give you the Jedi. I swear.
Leaning down, he breathed foul air into her face.
How?
They're going to call me on that comlink you found. They took the other one with them.
You're lying,
he shouted, but he wanted to believe her. She could see the need to believe her raging in his eyes. His hatred for her was outstripped only by his fear of Count Dooku.
I'm not,
she said, tears of pain streaming down her cheeks.
I will give them to you. I'll test the weapon on them. I'll do anything you want.
Hope and greed flared in his eyes.
Anything?
Yes. You show me my loved ones every day, General. You show me, so I can see it's not a trick, and they're alive and you've not harmed them. Show me that, and I will get you your revenge on the Jedi, and earn you Count Dooku's undying trust.
He stared at her greedily, mouth fallen open, his skin wet with avarice. Unfisting his fingers, he let go of her hair.
If you are lying, my dear, if this is a trick, I'll bring those pink blood sacks here, and then I'll gorge you on their screams.
No lies, General,
she whispered, choking.
No tricks.
Still, Dird stared at her, desperately wanting to believe her promises, desperately afraid this was a trap.
Do we have a deal, General?
Dird nodded, hating her.
We have a deal.
Good,
she said, and collapsed face down on the floor.
The Jedi said they'd protect my family and my friends, but Sam is dead. So either they lied, or they failed. Either way, I can't trust them. I am my loved one's only hope. Let the galaxy save itself. I will save who I can.
Sorry, said Anakin, his empty belly rumbled again. I can't help it. Obi-Wan looked at him. Try drinking some more water. No, thank you. Lantiban tap water tastes like pond sludge, said Anakin, sounding grumpy. We should have brought some of Bantina's meal packs with us. I mean, she offered. It wouldn't have been stealing. And carried them how? He shook his head, sighing. We'll be fine, Anakin. You know perfectly well a Jedi can function without food for extended periods. Well, yes, I know we can, Anakin muttered. I just don't want to. Grunting, he shuffled around a bit under the front counter.
Are you sure there aren't any biscuits in here? I'm hungry. Temper stirred. Anakin, what precisely are you hoping for? That somehow in the 5 minutes that have passed since you last asked if I was sure there weren't any biscuits, biscuits have miraculously manifested themselves? Well, said Anakin, grasping at straws. You never know. They could have. That bar of dirt miraculously manifested himself. Besides, I'm complaining for a reason. We need to fuel ourselves, Obi-Wan. Being able to scrape by on 3 mouthfuls every second day is a survival trait. We're looking at a bit more activity than just surviving, although that's pretty much at the top of the list. Annoyingly, his former apprentice had a point. The next day or so would see great demands placed upon them. Doubtless, they would be using the Force not only to gain access to Durd's compound for a second time, but afterward to escape it and then escape Separatist-controlled Lanteeb altogether. And using the Force extensively required deep physical reserves, which required adequate nourishment. I know, he said and shifted around a bit himself, stuck under his wretched desk, but we'll be fine. Beyond the confines of the boarded-up electronics shop, another new day was stirring. They could hear ground traffic now, and ships thundering out of the spaceport. Soon, there'd be foot traffic too, and more battle droid patrols. They'd have to remain completely silent. One wrong sound might lead to discovery and death. Restless, Anakin crawled out from beneath the counter and bounced to his feet. Toss me the comlink. I want to contact Bantina. There's nothing new to tell her, Anakin. Anakin frowned. We can tell her she hasn't been forgotten. I'll tell her, he said and activated the link. Dr. Fannin. Dr. Fannin, are you there?
Yes, Master Kenobi. I'm here. What's happening?
Instead of answering immediately, he took a moment to read her as well as he could. He sensed tension, fear, a heightened level of anxiety. Of course, she'd lived with intolerable stress for some time now. Best I not elaborate, Doctor, he said, habitually cautious. Unlike Anakin, he was still not ready to fully trust the woman. Events are in motion. All you need to do is hold tight and stall working on the project if you can. Tell Durd.
I don't need to. He's gone to see Dooku, but he'll be back tomorrow. Can you get me out of here tonight? There'll only be me and the droids here. We might not get another chance, and I'm afraid, Master Kenobi. I think Durd's regretting his decision to keep me alive.
And that would explain her increased fear and anxiety. He glanced at Anakin, who nodded, his expression fierce. Yes, Doctor, we can do that, though it's only fair to warn you that we might not have a full report on the status of your loved ones.
You've said you'll see them safe, Master Kenobi. You're a Jedi. I trust your word.
Do you think there's a chance Durd has changed his mind and taken the bioweapon formula with him to Dooku?
No. I told him I'd found an instability in the primary chained molecule sequence. He was very angry. He beat me again. Please, Master Kenobi, please get me out of here.
With a muffled curse, Anakin used the Force to pluck the comlink from his grasp. We will, Bantina. We'll be there after dark. Be ready. Hold on. Can you hold on? It's nearly over.
Yes.
She sounded on the verge of tears.
But not for long.
It won't be for long. I promise. We end this tonight. As Anakin disconnected the comlink, Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow at him. Snatching is discourteous. Ignoring that, Anakin tossed the comlink back to him. I was still hoping there'd be a way to take that bar of dirt home with us. So was I, he admitted. We'll just have to make him our next mission. Anakin grinned fiercely. That sounds like a plan. Now, I suggest we sleep for a few hours. Conserve our energy. We can contact the temple again later before we go to retrieve Dr. Fannin. Sleep? Anakin groaned. How do you expect me to sleep when I'm starving to death? Are you sure there aren't any
Hey, don't do that!
The last words came out muffled because he'd used the Force to plaster a sheet of old flimsy invoice across Anakin's face.
Hush,
he whispered severely, before somebody hears us.
and having managed the last word for once, he rolled onto his side and summoned sleep. The long Lantiban day dragged on, unbearably slow. Though they tried to sleep, true rest proved difficult to find. Acutely aware of their precarious position, they kept startling to wakefulness, alerted by passing battle droid patrols or the boom of a departing starship's thrusters. Being hungry didn't help either. A ground car collision right outside their hiding place had them sweating. The drivers started fighting, raised voices attracting unwanted attention. Then, the spaceport's Magna Guards weighed into the altercation. Soon after that, they heard weapons fire and screaming. And then silence, shot through with a woman's wild weeping. A final round of blaster fire silenced that. "The same thing's happening everywhere, you know," said Anakin in a low voice once the droids had moved on and it was safe to speak. "Everywhere the Separatists have taken over, people are dying." "Yes, they are," said Obi-Wan just as quietly. He had himself in hand, he did. Yes, there was grief for that unknown woman and for the three men who'd also died, who had been murdered. A Jedi could feel grief, but a Jedi did not lose himself in grief. That was the difference. "But you must remember, Anakin, that there has to be consolation in the knowledge that we're saving as many people as we can. It's just... you know as well as I do, we cannot save everyone. For your own peace of mind, I wish you'd find a way to accept that." Feeling a death through the Force was never pleasant. Distressed and resentful, Anakin closed his eyes. "How can you ask me to accept it? Our mandate is justice, Obi-Wan. What's happening now is our fault. We're to blame for things falling apart." "That's not true, Anakin," he protested, shocked. "The Jedi are not responsible for Dooku's turn to the dark side. He chose..." Anakin's eyes snapped open. "I'm not talking about Dooku. I'm talking about how the Jedi claim to defend those who can't defend themselves, yet leave so many defenseless people at the mercy of gangsters and slave traders and starvation and poverty." "That's not us, Anakin," he said wearily. "That's the Republic. It's politics. The Jedi do not involve themselves with politics. You know that, too." "Then maybe we should," Anakin retorted. "Maybe if the politicians won't do what needs to be done, we need to do it. Because somebody needs to. You wonder why people believe the lies Dooku and his cabal tell them? It's because they're desperate. The Republic's abandoned them, or it never cared in the first place. In the end, it's the same thing. The rich stay rich, and they make sure the poor stay broken and ignorant in the gutter." Obi-Wan stifled a sigh. "Oh, Anakin." This was about his childhood, again. About the indelible fingerprints slavery had left on his soul and his psyche. "Qui-Gon, did you never once stop to think of that? Did it never occur to you the damage might run too deep?" "Anakin." Anakin flicked him a frustrated look. "I know, you think you understand, I know you want to understand, but if you haven't lived it, Obi-Wan, you can't, and you never will." They really shouldn't be talking. Even keeping their voices low almost to whispering it was dangerous. But if he shut down the conversation now, if he refused to hear what Anakin had to say, he'd pile damage upon damage. And this wasn't the time to be at odds, not with so much depending upon them. Another transport blasted out of the spaceport. The shop's boarded up windows rattled. The desktop above his head vibrated, and the counter Anakin curled beneath. A pile of flimsies thudded to the floor, raising dust. Obi-Wan smothered a sneeze in the crook of his elbow. "Anakin," he said when he could trust himself to speak again. "I've never said the Republic's perfect. It's not. But the Senate..." "The Senate's corrupt," Anakin declared. "It's been corrupt for years, long before the Trade Federation's blockade of Naboo. You know that, Obi-Wan. You've been lecturing me about the perils of politicians ever since we met." "That's true," he acknowledged. "But hope isn't quite lost. Bail's not corrupt. Neither is Padme." For once, the mere mention of her name didn't provoke a reaction. "And neither is Palpatine," Anakin replied hotly. "But that's three politicians out of more than 1,000. and instead of the Jedi standing up to them, we go along. We do their bidding, we prop them up while their governments exploit the weak and the helpless. How can you tell me that's right? With an effort, Obi-Wan held on to his temper. I never said it was right, Anakin. I deplore it. But at this moment, flawed as it may be, the Galactic Republic is the best system we have. It's the only system we have, and it's better than a dictatorship, which is what Dooku is after and what we're here trying to prevent. If you're so concerned about galactic injustice, my friend, I suggest you talk to your friend Palpatine. He is the Supreme Chancellor, after all. Presumably, he has an interest in preserving the Republic. Anakin stared at him, incredulous. You don't think he knows the Senate's rotten? Obi-Wan, he knows. He knows better than anyone. He sees it day in and day out, and if he could fix it, he would. But he can't, because there are too many senators who like things the way they are. If he had more control over them, he could fix what's wrong. He would fix it. But then people like you would say he was just being a typical politician, grabbing power for its own sake. So you tell me, Obi-Wan, what's the answer?
I don't know, Anakin, he said, abruptly so tired and so dispirited. All I can tell you is we're not going to fix the problem while holed up in this abandoned electronics shop, hiding from battle droids and Magna Guards and Separatist forces. So let's focus on what we can do, shall we? Which is stop Lote Durd and Dooku from murdering countless innocents with their filthy new weapon.
I'm sorry, Anakin murmured, contrite. I know it sounds like I think you don't care. I don't think that, I don't.
And if he says it enough times, will he come to believe it?
But that wasn't fair. Anakin wasn't entirely wrong about him. He'd never been a slave, he'd never been beaten for making a mistake, never crawled beneath threadbare blankets, starving and fallen asleep with his mother's tears on his cheeks. He didn't remember his mother. He'd been raised in the temple, safe and loved. I have compassion. I have empathy. What I don't have are scars.
See if you can sleep again, Anakin, he said softly. I estimate 4 hours, a little less, until sunset. We can try contacting the temple again then.
Anakin nodded. How late do you want to leave it before we head back to Durd's compound?
As late as we can. The Seps believe their curfew is working. We should take advantage of their complacency.
Okay, said Anakin and rolled his eyes. More sleep it is. And with any luck, I'll dream about biscuits.
Chapter 20 Ahsoka. Startled out of her doze, Ahsoka slid off the soft chair and onto her feet.
Taria, I mean, Master Damson, you look better.
Master Damson flicked a quick look around the softly lit healing hall's antechamber.
We're alone. Taria's fine.
All right, Taria, she said, feeling a warm wash of pleasure, despite her various worries. Are you feeling better?
Taria wrinkled her nose.
As better as I'm likely to. Look, Ahsoka.
No, you don't have to explain. It's none of my business.
True, it's not, said Taria. But I know you're curious.
Are you hungry, too?
Hungry? She was starving.
I could eat.
And so could I. Taria stepped back. Come on.
You mean Master Vokara Chay's not keeping you here?
Trust me, Ahsoka. A stampeding herd of wild banthas couldn't keep me here, said Taria, backing up another step.
Don't worry. I've been given the all clear, I promise.
Not disbelieving, just a little bit doubtful, she bit her lip. On the way home to Coruscant, their mission accomplished, Taria had bled some more and been in obvious pain.
Are you sure?
Taria rolled her eyes.
I'm sure. Stop fussing, you old woman. One Vokara Chay in my life is enough.
It occurred to Ahsoka then that the Jedi Master was teasing her, bantering with her the way Sky Guy and Master Kenobi bantered with each other because they were friends.
Does that mean Taria and I are friends? Is that how easily it happens?
From the way Taria was smiling at her, it seemed the answer was yes.
Wow.
They made their way to the nearest dining hall in companionable silence. It looked like word of their exploits on Corellia was yet to circulate.
There was nothing more than simple friendliness in any of the nods and smiles they received from the other Jedi they encountered on the way. "So," said Taria, once they were seated in a private booth with bowls of steaming bean soup and fresh, crusty bread. The dining hall's air was warm and scented with good food. Scattered, cheerful conversations provided a backdrop of sound. "To make a long story short, Ahsoka, it's called Boritavi syndrome. It's not contagious, but it is terminal, eventually." Ahsoka felt her mouth suck dry. "Terminal? But, she's so young and strong and amazing, so alive. How did you get it?" "I ate the wrong kind of shellfish on Pamina Prime." With a wry smile, Taria stirred a pinch of salt into her soup. "Turns out it's the blue-shelled mollusk with the green stripe you need to watch out for. Blue mollusks with black stripes you can eat till you burst." She sat back. "Just a little tip to stand you in good stead if ever you find yourself on Pamina Prime." She'd never even heard of the place.
I'll try to remember that," she said.
All of a sudden, she wasn't hungry anymore.
"Taria, I'm..."
"Don't you say it. Don't you dare,"
Taria snapped, her face fierce. And then she sighed, looked away.
"Stang."
"No," she said quickly. "It's all right. You don't want pity, I get that. Sky Guy, I mean, Master Skywalker, he's the same about his arm. You know, the one Dooku cut off."
Taria pushed her spoon around her soup, then finally swallowed a mouthful.
"Anakin's lucky to have you, Ahsoka. You handled yourself brilliantly against that Krithing Anzati."
"Oh."
Embarrassed now, she pulled her bread to crumbs.
"I just followed my training. I mean, I'm lucky to have him, Taria. If you could see him in battle, or even when he's just sparring with Master Kenobi, he's...
"Something special," said Taria, nodding.
"I've heard. I guess that's the reason they call him the Chosen One."
"He hates being called that, you know," she said, dropping her voice just in case. "He never says so, but, well, I felt it."
Taria spooned up more soup.
"Can you blame him? Talk about a weight of expectations."
It was her new friend's instinctive understanding that loosened her tongue. There wasn't anyone she could talk to about this.
"I get so scared," she murmured. "When it comes to fighting the Seps, Sky Guy's fearless. He throws himself at them like he's indestructible, and he's not."
She felt a cold shiver run through her.
"He nearly died on Meriden, you know."
Taria nodded.
"I heard that too. I hear a lot of things, Ahsoka, even though these days I'm stuck here in the temple. Things like Anakin's not the only one who thinks the Seps can't kill him, and after seeing you in action, well,
I'd have to say that rumor is true."
Suddenly, she was interested in her soup after all.
"I don't know what you mean."
"I mean," said Taria, "that it looks to me like you're learning more from your master than a few fancy lightsaber moves."
She shrugged.
"Fortune favors the bold."
"Maybe so," Taria retorted.
"But the Force isn't an all-purpose cheating death security pass, Ahsoka. Be careful you're not so caught up with worrying about Anakin that you forget to worry about yourself. The Order needs young Jedi like you. This war's taking a heavy toll. We've already lost too many good people."
She didn't know what to say, hearing that. She wasn't used to lavish praise. It wasn't Anakin's way. It wasn't the Jedi way.
So why?
"Dying gives me a unique perspective," said Taria, easily reading her troubled thoughts. "Life's too short not to tell the truth. Ahsoka was ambushed by a sharp and selfish grief. We've just become friends, and now I have to lose her? I hate this. It's not fair."
And then the grief was swamped by hot shame.
"At least you're not dying. Wait till you're dying, then moan about not fair."
Taria dunked bread in her bean soup, chewed, then swallowed.
"So, while I was being fussed over by Vokara Che, I don't suppose you heard how Obi-Wan and Anakin are getting on, wherever they are?"
Ahsoka shook her head.
"Not a word. Not even a whisper. I wish I was brave enough to ask Master Yoda."
"Huh,"
said Taria, amused.
I doubt even your sky guy is brave enough for that. I tried to see for myself, she confessed, in the Force, but all I got was a headache. I guess I've still got a lot of learning to do.
Pushing her bowl aside, Taria frowned.
Don't blame yourself, Ahsoka. The Force on Coruscant is cloudy. I've tried as well, and I can't see anything either.
Ahsoka tried to smile.
I wish that made me feel better, but it doesn't. Even without seeing through the Force, Taria, I...
She pressed a fist to her chest, where her heart was bumping hard.
I've got a bad feeling here. Something's not right. I think Sky Guy's in danger. Well, more danger than he's usually in, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes sense, said Taria grimly. I've got the same bad feeling about Obi-Wan, and since they're together...
Then what should we do? What can we do?
Taria shrugged.
We can wait.
Wait? For what?
For the clouds to clear.
That's it?
Pretty much, said Taria, her smile darkly amused. Unless you want to make a run at Master Yoda after all.
No, 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 she didn't want to do that. She tucked her chin and folded her arms.
I hate waiting, she muttered.
You and me both, said Taria.
So, I suggest we keep ourselves busy. I'm not quite up to sparring yet, but if you like, I can watch you go a few rounds with a training remote, give you some pointers. How does that sound?
Ahsoka had to smile.
That sounds great.
Then let's do it, said Taria, and slid out of the booth.
Last one to the dojo has to buy the drinks. Go!
Sensing Banyero's eager approach, Yoda looked up from the datapad he was reading. A moment later, the trans-peristeel doors to the temple's high-security comm center hummed open, and the communications chief joined him.
Master Yoda, it's Obi-Wan.
Excellent,
said Yoda, dropping the datapad into his hover chair's side pocket. Hoping to hear from Obi-Wan again, knowing that time was in short supply, he'd elected to spend the night in the comm center, so that if his two Jedi on Lanteeb did contact the temple, he wouldn't have to make them wait while he was sent for.
Speak with them now, can I?
The signals come through on a different relay this time, said Banyaro. I'll have it patched through to you in a moment.
Thank you,
Yoda said, and guided his chair to the nearest comm console. When at last Banyaro gave him the signal, he toggled the switch.
Yoda, this is Obi-Wan.
Master, we have the chance to get Dr. Fernan off-world within the next few hours, said Obi-Wan. This might be our only chance. Have you had any success securing those hostages?
The signal from Lanteeb was faint, Obi-Wan's voice slushy with interference. Yoda looked at Banyaro, but the comm chief shook his head. This was the best he could do. Resigned to that, Yoda leaned close to the comm console vocoder.
Yes, Obi-Wan. Rescued is your scientist's family, and all of her friends save one. The last friend, now we are trying to find. Enough that should be to secure her cooperation.
It should be, but, Master, I'm afraid she might balk at coming with us if there's a chance that even one person could be hurt because of her.
Then lie to her you must, Obi-Wan. Tell her everyone is safe.
Lie to her?
Even through the interference, Obi-Wan's shocked dismay was palpable.
But, Master...
Happy with the notion I am not Master Kenobi,
Yoda said.
Even less happy am I with the thought of thousands falling to Lock Durd's evil weapon, hmm? Remind you, must I, that we are at war.
No, Master,
said Obi-Wan, chastened.
Of course not. I'll secure her cooperation and we'll contact you again as soon as we can. Kenobi out.
The lights on the comm console died as the signal was disconnected. Discreet as always, Banyaro stopped a few paces distant and cleared his throat.
Master Yoda, do you require anything else?
With a weary sigh, Yoda shook his head.
No. To my private chamber I will go now, Banyaro. But alert me you must if word we receive from the last retrieval team, no matter how late the hour, or if from Obi-Wan we hear again.
Banyaro bowed.
Of course, Master. I'll contact you the moment there's any word.
Thank you,
he said, and left the comm center to meditate in private and wait for news.
It was all he could do. It wasn't enough, but he'd long ago learned to take what he could get and trust in the Force to provide the rest. Anakin stared at Obi-Wan as he quickly dismantled the jerry-rigged comm hub. He wished they didn't have to, but it was too dangerous a clue to their presence to leave behind.
What? Said Obi-Wan, not looking up.
Anakin, so help me, if you say one more word about biscuits, I'll...
Biscuits? I don't care about biscuits.
Obi-Wan, am I hearing things or did you just agree to lie to Bantina?
The merest hint of a hesitation. Then Obi-Wan kept on ripping out circuits and data chips. They'd only turned one lamp on this time just to be safe. In the dim illumination, his expression was opaque, utterly unreadable.
I've been thinking about how we're going to get from Dird's compound back here to the spaceport, he said. And then through spaceport security without our local ID chips and with Dr. Fernan in tow.
It's going to be tricky, but...
Yeah, I've been thinking about it too, Anakin said, impatient. Never mind that for now.
Obi-Wan, what's going on? We are Jedi, and Jedi don't lie.
No answer. Obi-Wan force-pulled the torsion pliers to him and wrestled with a recalcitrant circuit. With an effort, Anakin tamped down his rising anger.
Obi-Wan, talk to me.
Still, Obi-Wan wouldn't look at him.
There's nothing to say, Anakin. You heard Master Yoda.
We're at war, and war compels us to perform distasteful acts.
Besides, it's more than likely that by the time we reach Dr. Fernan, the last of the hostages will be in safe hands.
You don't know that. Yoda doesn't know that. I can't tell Bantina we've saved all her family and friends if we haven't.
You won't have to. I'll tell her. And it's Master Yoda.
Yeah, whatever.
Obi-Wan.
What, Anakin? Obi-Wan demanded.
What would you have me do? Defy Yoda? Abandon Lan Teeb without completing our mission? Sacrifice thousands, perhaps millions of lives, so I might keep my conscience unsullied? This isn't about you, he said, tempted to let his temper loose entirely. It's about right and wrong and not breaking our word.
We promised, Bantina.
No, Anakin, you promised, said Obi-Wan, close to losing his own temper. Yet again, you allowed your emotions to rule you. Well, this time, Master Skywalker, you'll control yourself. Is that clear? What we are facing is bigger than Bantina, bigger than your muddled, misplaced emotions, bigger even than our Jedi honor. This might be the moment in which the war is lost or won, and I will not allow you to lose it for fear of hurting that woman's feelings.
Stunned, he stared at Obi-Wan.
So you're saying you're all right with lying to her? That it doesn't bother you if...
Oh, Anakin, of course it bothers me, said Obi-Wan, hands fisted on his knees. How can you claim to know me, be my friend, and ask if it bothers me?
So it bothers you, he said, feeling suddenly calm. But you'll still do it.
Obi-Wan nodded. If I have to. His lips twisted. Just as you defied the Council by going to Geonosis with Padme.
So what is this, Anakin? Do as I say, not as I do?
Oh, well, that was just playing dirty.
I defied the Council to save you.
One man, Obi-Wan retorted. I'm trying to save thousands. We're trying to save thousands, aren't we? Or is this where we part company, Anakin?
Part company?
I'm not going anywhere, he said tightly. I promised Bantina I'd get her off this rock, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
And to do that, it looks like you'll have to lie, said Obi-Wan, challenging.
Are you telling me you can't lie in a good cause?
Padme.
Anakin felt his guts twist. Who am I kidding? My whole life is a lie. I lie to this man every time I draw breath, and next to him, Bantina Fernan means nothing.
You're right, he said, and raised his hands. I'm sorry.
Now it was Obi-Wan's turn to stare.
Just like that?
You'd rather I kept arguing?
No, of course not, but...
Then let's move on, he said flatly. Our exit strategy, what are you thinking? Instead of answering, Obi-Wan finished dismantling the old comm hub unit. His face was utterly unreadable, his feelings tamped down tight. When the hub was at last scattered around him in bits and pieces, he fished out the betraying Republic-issue scrambler chip
tucked it into his shirt's shielded pocket, then turned off the lamp. Instantly, they were plunged into darkness. "All right," he said, as though they'd never once exchanged heated words. "Here's how I propose we extricate ourselves from Lanteeb. We return to the spaceport in the official ground car we first followed to the compound." "With Bantina driving and us as collateral," Anakin interrupted. "She can tell anyone who challenges us at the spaceport that we're human test subjects. The Seps probably won't bat an eyelid, but if they do, we can mind-trick them. Although I doubt they will. They know who she is, who she works for. Not even droids will be stupid enough to question her authority. Then we load into the ship and get out of here." Obi-Wan's silence was eloquent. "Hey," Anakin said, shrugging. "I told you I'd been thinking." "Apparently," said Obi-Wan. He almost sounded amused. "Then we're set, we can go? No last-minute qualms?" "None, I'm good." And of course, that was a lie. But who cared? He was practicing for Bantina. Getting in the mood. In the darkness, there was a soft sigh. "Anakin, how are you feeling, truthfully?" If he said hungry, Obi-Wan would throw something at him. But he was ravenous, and he hated feeling hungry. The sensation stirred too many memories, distracted him with the past when he needed his mind on the present. "I feel sad," he said at last. "If it turns out we weren't able to save that last hostage, I hope Bantina can forgive us. I hope she'll help us anyway." "If she's the woman you believe her to be," said Obi-Wan, "she will. She'll not punish thousands of innocents because we failed or lied. Do you believe that?" "I'd like to," said Obi-Wan. "This time I'd very much like to be wrong." Despite the cloaking darkness, he smiled. "Well, you know what they say. There's a first time for everything. And I'm sure this will be it." But Obi-Wan didn't sound sure. He sounded doubtful and pressured and, yes, a little bit sad. Not the right frame of mind to be taking into a mission that promised to be as precarious as this one. "And that's partly my fault. I started the fight." "Hey," he said, "you know what else I feel? Hungry. Go on, hit me, you know you want to." To his great relief, Obi-Wan managed a faint chuckle. "No, it's all right. Truth be told, I'm hungry too. It's unfortunate, but it can't be helped. We'll manage." Of course they would. They'd manage by drawing on the Force to fuel them, which it would, but at a steep cost to their overstretched bodies. And when the inevitable crash came afterward, it was going to be messy. "I can cope with the burnout," Anakin said, "but what about you?" "You let me worry about me." He really wished he could see Obi-Wan's face. It was much harder to read him in the dark, but there was no point pushing. "First rule of managing Master Kenobi? Pick your battles." "Now, I suggest we meditate until it's time to go," Obi-Wan added. "We'll need all our wits about us for this one." "I couldn't agree more," Anakin said. "Meditation it is." 4 hours later, they stirred and unfolded themselves from beneath cramped counter and desk. They took a few minutes to limber up, warm their muscles, and encourage the Force to burn more brightly in their blood and fill them with borrowed strength for the challenges facing them. Anakin eased himself upright. "You don't think we should warn Bantina that we're on our way?"
"I'd rather not risk it," said Obi-Wan. "She'll be ready. She knows this is her only chance."
"Okay. Then can we go? I'm not getting any younger."
Obi-Wan snorted.
"Who is?"
Wrapped in the Force, they abandoned their hiding place and reached out with their senses to taste the night. Beyond the harshly lit spaceport, the city was again eerily dark. A miserly scattering of stars and a pinched cheese rind of moon shed little light. Nothing stirred. It was a dead place reeking of fear. They could feel the arrogance of the human separatists over the road, in the port, could see Magna Guards and battle droids unmoving at their posts.
"All right," said Obi-Wan. "Let's do this, shall we?"
Lock Durd's compound was a long way away, and this time there wasn't a droid-powered trundle cart to make life that little bit easier. With their destination too far for Force sprinting,
they opted for the less draining technique of enhanced short-burst running. Speed and slow, speed and slow. Hearts pounding, breathing deep. Gradually, the city fell behind them. They swam through the night like fish in the deep. Twice they encountered Separatist patrols. 20 battle droids on droning staps, hunting for humans to chase and kill. Twice they avoided detection, flung face down on the cracked, crumbling edges of the Ferrocrete Road, plunged as far as they dared inside the shrouding force. Then, a swift tap on the shoulder, an answering nod, and it was up and away again, speed and slow, speed and slow. Reached the right-hand turn leading off the main highway, they padded, quiet and cautious, through the echoingly empty streets of the industrial district. The area felt like a graveyard. Buried hopes, buried dreams, everything decent crushed by the dark side. It was draining, oppressive, misery like soaking rain. Anakin ran through it, teeth gritted. "Get me out of this place." Obi-Wan ran beside him, every emotion locked down tight. At last, they reached the top of the street that led to Durd's compound and Bantina. They stopped running and stepped into the deeper shadows of a squat, low-roofed building. "What do you think?" Anakin asked, catching his breath. His heart was pounding harder than normal, his hungry body's resentful response to the demands he was placing on it. "Do we wait here and hope for a truck? Or risk going in the way we got out last night?" Obi-Wan's breathing was the smallest touch ragged. He was feeling it too. "A truck would be nice, but we can't wait for one indefinitely. For all we know, they only turn up once a week." That was unfortunately true. "We should have asked Bantina about the compound's delivery schedule when we had the chance." "No doubt, but let's keep our minds focused on the present, shall we?" Obi-Wan hated making mistakes. "How long do you want to wait, then?" "I suggest we play it by ear." "Suits me." There was silence, and then, after a little while, Obi-Wan stirred. "I don't sense Durd's presence. Not even that odd, slippery deflection. Why are you even checking for it?" he said, surprise shading to annoyance. "Unless... what? You think Bantina's lying?" "You know the drill, Anakin," said Obi-Wan, deliberately patient. "Trust but verify. I'm not in the mood to walk into a trap, are you?" "No," he muttered, and reached out with his feelings. "I'm not doubting her, I'm just being careful. I don't sense Durd either, but I can feel Bantina. She's scared." "No, terrified." Her fear made him feel sick. Obi-Wan shrugged. "Who can blame her? You think I don't know what I'm asking of her, Anakin, but I do. And I'm not unsympathetic." That was true. He wasn't. But he was coldly capable of denying sympathy and compassion if the task at hand required him to be hard. Obi-Wan Kenobi was a far more complicated man than a first glance would suggest. "I'm not sensing any hint of trouble. Are you?" "No," said Obi-Wan after a pause. "But don't get complacent, Anakin. Fueling ourselves with the Force, as we've been doing, can muddy perception. Take nothing for granted." "Trust me, I wasn't planning to." "Good, because..." "Yeah," he said as Obi-Wan's fingers brushed his arm. "I can hear it. Looks like we're in luck." Or they would be, if the approaching vehicle was heading for the compound. But it had to be, didn't it? Where else was there to go around here? "Steady," murmured Obi-Wan, as the first sweep of headlights dazzled the night. "Steady. This might be our only chance." There wasn't a handily deep-set doorway to hide in this time, so they ducked around the edge of the building and flattened themselves against its rough wall. The truck came closer. Closer. Turned into the street. "Now," said Obi-Wan, and they made their move. Lying prone on the truck's roof, anchored in place by the Force, Anakin tried to ignore his body's fresh protests and their echoes in Obi-Wan prone beside him. "We'll be paying for this for weeks, I bet." Squinting ahead, he saw the brightly lit compound gates, felt the buzzing tingle of the laser grids. The truck slowed again, negotiated the first security checkpoint, crawled forward, negotiated the second, then entered the compound proper.
So now, it was just a simple case of repeating their previous fun and games, slip off the truck as soon as it reached the loading dock, wait for the droids to stack the delivered crates on anti-grav pallets and float them away, get up to the main building undetected, crawl through its extensive ducting, oh my aching back, grab Bantina, and run. He felt another tap on his shoulder and nodded to let Obi-Wan know he was ready. Then, he took a deep breath and tensed himself, ready to leap. Not quite halfway to the loading dock, the delivery truck stopped. Anakin turned his head and looked at Obi-Wan. For the first time, he felt an inkling of something wrong. What were you saying about taking nothing for granted? The night lit up with the power of 1,000 suns. Training honed instinct took over. Anakin had his lightsaber out and ignited before his booted feet hit the stalled truck's roof. So did Obi-Wan. They were targets up here, but at least with height they could see what they were up against. Starkly lifted out of shadow, marching clear of the concealment, battle droids. The SEP compound was suddenly full of them. Skinny clankers, super battle droids, vultures, droidicas. Oh no, Anakin breathed, staring. Where the stang did they come from? Where do you think, said Obi-Wan. He sounded sick with disgust. They're a gift from Dr. Fannin and General Locke Dird. No, Anakin said, abruptly lightheaded. No, she wouldn't betray us, Obi-Wan. I felt her. I read her. She wouldn't throw us to... We can argue about it later, said Obi-Wan, his voice tight, his presence in the Force alight with a rare fury. Right now, we... There was a high-pitched humming and an ominous rattle in the dark. Jump! He shouted, and the massed ranks of battle droids opened fire. Lightsabers whirling, they leapt to the ground, leapt back to back, and began fighting for their lives. It was Geonosis all over again, only this time there was no Padme to provide blaster cover. No Mace Windu, no Yoda. No clones in their gunships swooping in to save the day. Don't look now, Obi-Wan, but I think we're in trouble. Blaster fire was coming from every direction. They were managing to deflect each volley. They hadn't been singed or struck yet, but it was only a matter of time before the enemy scored a hit. Even though they'd inflicted some damage, they were still brutally outnumbered. Anakin felt the world shift and blur around him as he sank deeper into the Force than he'd ever gone before. It was almost painful, nearly too much to bear, as hard to endure as Bantina's betrayal. Why? Why? How could I not see it? Forget about it, Anakin! Yelled Obi-Wan over the whine and sizzle and crump of the enemy's attack. Focus on this. What will the why matter if we're dead? Good point. Slowly but surely the battle droids were closing in. They had to get out of here. They had to... Obi-Wan, the ground car! If it's here, if any kind of ground car is here, if we can get to it... Oh, he was crazy. I'm crazy. If I try this, I'm going to get both of us killed. But if they stayed, they were dead too. So, Anakin, pick your poison. If you can hold off these blasted clankers long enough for me to rig the ground car system, I can fly us out of here. You can do that? Obi-Wan shouted, incredulous, almost drowned by the high-pitched buzzing whine of their lightsabers and the booming and shrieking of the droids' concerted attack. The air stank of heated plasma and burned grass and desperation. Yes, he shouted back. Maybe, I don't know. Anakin, make up your mind. Yes, yes, I can do that, he said, and risked a look at Obi-Wan. His friend's face was streaked with sweat, eyes almost blank with a fierce concentration. Beneath the concentration was a dangerously escalating exhaustion. If we make it to the parking area in one piece, can you hold off these barbs? By myself? Yes! While you play with a ground car. Yes! Obi-Wan, will you try? The droids were meters away now, closing fast. They were moments from death. If they were going to do this, if they were going to try... Oh, why not? Said Obi-Wan, and actually laughed. I've nothing better to do, so what are you waiting for, Master Skywalker? Run! Raggedly, Anakin reached for the power to force sprint, heard himself shout in pain because he'd used too much of himself already. Even the Chosen One had his limits, it seemed. He shouted again then, and heard Obi-Wan's equally pained cry as they force-pushed their way through the droids firing at them, almost point-blank. He felt another pain, sharper and hotter, sear its way along his ribs, and he knew he'd been clipped by a blaster bolt.
but he could worry about that later. First rule of business, keep us alive. Reaching the compound's roofed parking area, they staggered out of their forced sprint, and he nearly sobbed aloud. The fancy ground car was still there.
But there was no time to give thanks, because rolling right behind them were five shielded droidicas, and marching behind them, countless undamaged droids.
He saw blood, but looking at Obi-Wan, he couldn't tell where it came from. Focus, focus. He's not dead yet, and neither are you. We can do this. Do you want my lightsaber?
No, said Obi-Wan tightly. You might need it. Get to work, Anakin. I'll hold them off for as long as I can.
As Obi-Wan turned to face their attackers, lightsaber in one hand, the other extended ready to force repel the approaching droids, he took a deep, painful breath and extinguished all emotion, narrowing his focus to this thing, this one thing that he knew how to do better than any other thing he had learned in his life. Machines, and how to make them, how to mold them, how to rule them. Dimly aware of Obi-Wan's furious defense of him, with no time for care or finesse, he used the tip of his lightsaber to slice off the ground car's rear engine housing, then rested the weapon on the vehicle's roof. It was a beautiful machine, sleek and powerful. It pained him to mutilate it, but he didn't have a choice. Come on, Anakin, think. Locate the anti-grav platform. Isolate the repulsor circuits and crosswire them. Rip out the height limiter. That's all you have to do. The ground car's engine was an elegant model of simplicity. He'd never seen its design before, and yet with one look, he knew it. As intimately as he knew the curves and planes of Padme's beautiful face, it had been this way his whole life. Machines spoke to him. He understood instinctively every last one of their sweetly whispered secrets. And there was the anti-grav platform. There were the repulsor circuits. Hello, circuits, meet your new best friends. Goodbye, height limiter. Knuckles skinned and bleeding, horribly aware of the blaster fire behind him, around him, screaming past him close enough to crisp his hair and his clothes, he worked the machine harder and faster than he'd ever worked one before. And then he saw the state-of-the-art security tracker and fried it with his lightsaber for good measure.
Anakin! Called Obi-Wan. Anakin, hurry up! I can't!
Looking over his shoulder, he saw that Obi-Wan was swaying, the thrust and slash of his lightsaber weakening. Hardly any of the attacking droids were falling now. A blaster bolt ripped by him and blew a hole in the ferrocrete less than a meter away. Any moment now they'd be surrounded and dead. He dropped his weapon and hot-wired the ground car's ignition. The machine roared into life, a promise of speed and power and life.
Obi-Wan,
he said, yanking the front passenger door open, then summoning his lightsaber to his filthy, blood-stained hand.
I've got this. I'll cover you. Get in. We've got to go.
Obi-Wan turned, almost overbalancing, and stumbled for the ground car. Half falling, half crawling, he got inside and pulled the door shut after him. Anakin, the blood roaring in his head, the force howling in his blood, threw himself forward and flung every last bit of himself at their swiftly closing enemy. The first two rows of clankers tumbled like leaves in a storm. He screamed with the effort, screamed with the pain. And as the droids clattered and shot one another and fell to pieces on the ground, he turned and ran back to the ground car. Obi-Wan opened the driver's side door for him. Deactivating his lightsaber, he clambered in, slammed the door closed again, and grabbed hold of the controls.
Get the shield up! Find the shield! He snapped at Obi-Wan as he fired the engine harder.
Oh, it was sweet, this thing. It was sweet like a bird, sweet like honey on the tongue, eager and responsive almost to a thought. Obi-Wan found the shield switch on the console and flipped it just in time. A barrage of blaster bolts smacked them from every side.
Hold on!
Anakin said, his breathing ragged, his vision bleary with sweat and sudden fear.
This might not be pretty.
He rammed them out of the roofed parking area, scattering droids like Skittles. With the height limiter ripped out and the repulsor circuits enhanced, the ground car soared up like an airspeeder, sort of. The droids fired after them to no avail. The ground fell away. The droid army swiftly dwindled. Shuddering, awkward now, but still with glorious power, they flew over the compound fencing into the night dark sky. Exhausted, hurting, Anakin smiled and smiled and smiled. Beside him, Obi-Wan nodded.
You did it.
Well done. He sounded shattered. He looked worse.
pushed almost to passing out, his face chalky white in the console's pale running lights. There was more blood, too, on both arms and legs. His pathetic Lantiban clothing had been no protection at all. Anakin felt a thump of fear.
Hey, are you okay? You're not going to faint on me, are you?
Faint? Said Obi-Wan, somehow managing to sound offended. Don't be ridiculous.
I'm fine. In fact, that was so entertaining, I say we go back and do it all over again. You're a riot, you know that?
He retorted. No, we are not going back.
Oh well, said Obi-Wan with a small, pained shrug. It was just an idea.
Beyond the shielded front view screen, the night stretched on, seemingly limitless. Anakin could see no ground lights, nothing that might indicate their location. The ground car's controls felt heavy in his hands, but they were doing all right. They were airborne and alive.
Stang, I am good.
So, Obi-Wan, he said, sideways glancing again. What's the plan? I don't think we can risk the spaceport, do you? Obi-Wan snorted.
Oddly. They'll be on full alert by now. We wouldn't make it 5 steps.
What's our altitude? Anakin looked at the console. There was no altimeter.
Your guess is as good as mine. You seem to be forgetting that this thing's not meant to fly.
And yet here we are flying, Obi-Wan murmured. How long before we stop flying and start falling, do you suppose?
Ha! He retorted. You need to have more faith, Master Kenobi.
Obi-Wan gave him another pointed look.
Really? Well, I'll certainly try to take your advice, Anakin. Though I feel bound to point out to you that since we've no idea where we are, or where we're going, or what we'll do when we get there, my supply of faith is sorely overstretched as it is.
He peered out the passenger window.
It's as dark as the inside of a bantha out there. Can't see a blasted thing below us.
And I can't see a blasted thing in front of us, Anakin said.
But I'm not worried. I'm not.
No way we can risk putting the headlights on. Cross your fingers that we don't fly into a tree.
Or a house, said Obi-Wan, or a hill, or a droid ship. Really, the possibilities for disaster are endless.
He was sounding almost cheerful. Maybe a piece of flying droid had clipped him on the head.
So maybe I should turn around and go back after all.
Obi-Wan looked at him.
Please don't.
The ground car was shuddering a little now, fighting him.
Great, the blasted machine's scared of heights.
Okay, he said, wrestling the vehicle back under control. The Lantib briefing notes Agent Varric gave us. What did they say? They said one city with the spaceport, then nothing but scattered villages. So we head for the country. Fly this thing until it's ready to drop, then ditch it somewhere it won't be found, and lay low in a village until we can work out how to get off this rock.
Obi-Wan spared him another eloquent look. Yes, that sounds terribly plausible, Anakin. Except for the part about this ground car not being found. In fact, I expect the Seps are already tracking it, which means...
No, they're not, he said smugly.
I burned out the transponder.
Oh, said Obi-Wan after a moment. Good job. That first wild burst of elation and adrenaline had faded, leaving an uncertain dread in its wake. But somehow, he managed to dredge up a smile.
No big deal, just doing what my master taught me.
Of course you were, said Obi-Wan. Then he sighed, and all his escaping pain was in the sound.
So, here we are in dire straits, again. Really, I should be used to this by now.
The ground car's blunt nose dipped, threatening a dive. With a head-throbbing effort, Anakin wrenched it up again.
It's okay. It's okay. We're okay,
he said, risking another sideways look at Obi-Wan.
We're okay.
Oh, Anakin, said Obi-Wan. There was no color at all left in his face.
Let's not kid ourselves, shall we? You and I are anything but okay.
Anakin wanted to argue. He wanted to say,
Obi-Wan, you're wrong.
But he couldn't. How could he?
Stang. Stang!
We really are in trouble.
And at that moment, for the life of him, he couldn't see a way out. To be continued. This is Jeff Gerner. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Clone Wars, Gambit, Stealth by Karen Miller. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Star Wars, Clone Wars, Gambit, Stealth is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2010. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.